The team at Violent Gentlemen saw what I could do at their weekly skate and decided it was time to make our relationship official. Proud to announce the newest sponsor of the Eat 'Em Up podcast, Orange County's finest Violent Gentlemen Hockey Club. Welcome to Eat 'Em Up. Guy Hebert joins us for today's epi. Guy, it's been a while. It's been you and Frenchie had me on your guys' podcast way back when, and I'm wearing the same t-shirt. I had to do it.
Hey, some things don't change, right?
No. Well,
are you saying that Frenchie and I put you on the path to success?
You certainly did.
All right.
You certainly did.
I like the shout out early into the show.
Yes.
Because it's taken me a while to get here, but I'll let you move into that.
Well, speaking of getting here, that's another story. A lot going on with the construction of OC Vibe. So all fun stuff. But we had to change course, if you will. I always only allot a certain amount of time to get here each time. If there's an accident, I told you, Guy, I'm probably calling you up and we're going to cut the show. But listen, I made it.
I was going solo. I was going to go rogue. I was going to eat them up. Gibo style.
You know the standards here, right? You know the standards. So I thought you would have been a great fill-in if that were to be the case. Why has it taken you so long, Guy? It's been, I'm heading into my third year with DuckStream. Why do you think it's taken, what, this is episode 48? 48 epis.
Listen, this is a touchy subject for me.
Yep.
Because we already
air it out. That's why
shake it out.
Yes.
So we already established that Frenchie and I helped put you on the path to this, you know, superstardom in the podcast world.
Thank you.
And so I don't know if you wanted me to be the first guest or you were hoping that maybe I would be the last guest and that's how you would wrap it up. So is this the last episode?
I want to make it clear, nothing about Guy's representation, the people he managed.
Management company.
Yeah. There was no conflicts there. We just didn't ask. And for me, I knew I had to get the reps in. Okay. I knew I had to get the reps in. I knew I had to be more polished. I just wasn't ready for you.
Okay.
Guy,
all right.
One or two episodes in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I can respect that. I mean, I don't want Emerson eat 'em up like 1.0.
And
I'd rather have 3.0.
I think I'm probably, 2.8.
You might be 5.0 now. I mean, you're a superstar,
hopefully,
man. For everybody who's listening out there, I love listening to your podcasts.
I appreciate
that. I think
you
do an incredible job, insightful. Little bit of humor at times that surprises me, right?
I'd like to think I'm funny at times. Yeah, hopefully I am.
Yeah. So
I think that's why they tune in.
Listen, I'm a big fan. I'll just leave it at that.
I appreciate it. Hey, the feeling's mutual, Guy. Look, within my 2 years now here at DuckStream, two complete seasons. What is that? 82 games a season. So that's 164 between 2 years. Do I got that math right? I think I do. So Guy, the 21-point jump between two seasons ago and last season, what do you think were some of the keys to why that was the case?
Well, I think first, you brought in a brand new coach, and so systems were different, and guys weren't used to playing the system. I think it's that, it's like anything. There is always, a little bit of time that it takes for guys to kind of implement the system to the players to feel comfortable with that system. Brought in a number of new players over the last couple seasons. And of course, we've been integrating all these really young, talented players who coming from junior or college or even down the street in San Diego may not have been comfortable. And I think it just took that time for them to get used to playing the regular system. And then, of course, they juggled the way the power play worked and the penalty kill unit worked. So I think there was a lot of new things instituted by that coaching staff. And I think for them to gel, it did take a little bit of time. And, as a player, when lack of consistency with line mates, I think that has a huge impact on how you can get into the flow of any game. But of course, if you're trying to do something different and that doesn't come, firsthand or that you haven't really played before, I think that had a big effect. So as guys got more comfortable, And I think lines started to settle a little bit. You got some great veteran leadership. We got more veteran leadership in the last couple of years. And I think that kind of helped settle down the room. And I think last year in particular, I mean, I know we'll get to this, but I thought goaltending was spectacular. I thought the combination of Gibby and Dosti held the fort many nights and got the team a lot of wins and a lot of extra points, even if they didn't win in overtime or the shootout. So I think there was a lot of factors that kind of were the growing pains of two seasons ago to last season. And if you're a Ducks fan and you're sitting out there, you're going, I love seeing this kind of improvement over the last 2 years, knowing that the team is continually getting better and the youngsters. I mean, I'll just throw out Jackson Lacombe. I mean, look at his progress over the last couple seasons. You know, we saw some, you know, bright, like, oh my God, I think he can do it here at the NHL. And then other nights where you're like, I don't think he's ready. And then last year, of course, it was just an incredible season for him.
Well, first off, we'll get to the goaltending department.
Yeah, I know.
We will. You're breathing heavy.
Listen,
I know.
If I throw it out there, then it might stick to the wall.
It did. Hey, I'm just as excited as you to get to the all the goalie stuff. But you made a great point in there about chemistry and on-ice camaraderie. We know the locker room's close, but as far as solidifying lines, right? It's something that I haven't even thought of. Like, we know just lines, big time lines throughout the league, whether it's the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference, some of the big time matchups. Now, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl have been switching it around at times, but when they're, especially late in the games, you'll see their coaching staff put those two together, try to make something happen, right? So just the solidification of lines, I think, is key. Guys feeling maybe better and just more comfortable with one another as they play and log more games together. And then, as you mentioned, the goaltending, the guys keeping them in it. I just thought the team got hungrier, right? I just thought battle wins.
And I think that came from the top, right? I think that was Pat Verbeek saying, this is the culture and the way I want my team to play. I want you to hunt the puck, right? We heard Greg Cronin say that many a time in our conversations with him. And I think that translated down to the players thinking, hey, every time there's a loose puck, I want to hunt that thing down there and I want that puck, right? And that's a mentality that I think that it doesn't happen overnight. Not everybody has it, right? There's some guys who are that way and they see the loose puck and they go, that's my puck and I'm getting it. Other guys have to be nudged along to say, hey, if it's 50-50, you got to come up with that puck. So I think that's a good point too, is that finding a way to be able to be on the aggressive side of trying to get that puck back.
And part of that too, the added layer is not taking as many penalties. Now, you know, still maybe too many. You want to get to the top half and top 10 and the least amount of penalty minutes. You get it, more power play time, sets you up better for success. But I think when they're moving their feet, right? Once you stall your feet, now you start pulling and prodding, right? Yeah. But you continue to move your feet. That kind of mirrors that hunger mentality, winning puck battles and wanting to be first to the loose pucks like you mentioned. How about, just in my view, a home run when it comes to the coaches, right? You have Joel Quenneville getting hired. That was like the first big news story for the Ducks in this offseason. And then you add Jay Woodcroft, right, who many believed was in the running for a head coach anywhere, right?
And I'm sure he was, right? He had to be a candidate for every available spot in the NHL.
That's what I was seeing. I know you were seeing the same thing, yeah, right? So you get just a 1-2 like knockout combo. Just speak on the addition of those two guys and some of the other coaching staff. Of course, you got Ryan McGill is hired as the assistant coach. Andrew Brewer joins Tim Army and Peter Bujaj, who stay. We know Tim and we know Pete. Just unbelievable glue guys, right off the ice. Just great people. So it just seems like we're adding great people off the ice and guys who have experience and can get it done. So just talk about maybe Jay Woodcroft, the added assistant coaches, new assistant coaches. And then furthermore, what Jay Woodcroft's going to do to the power play. right? Some of the numbers, he had a record power play percentage in a single season, setting an NHL record, 32.4% in 22-23 with the Edmonton Oilers. Right? I think I'd say so. Would you see him, follow-up question, adding potentially to the power play? Because we need it. Anything yeah. and everything, but any insight to that? So just a 10-part
yeah.
question.
Yeah, 10 parts. All right, that's a lot of great stuff right there. Okay, my perception is that the franchise, you know, Samueli's, Pat Verbeek, sat down and said, how do we become winners? We are ready to win. We've got loaded talent of youngsters that are coming along and coming along nicely. But, you know, we're ready to take that next step. We expect to be a playoff team. And I think when you get that kind of opportunity from your ownership, it allows you to start doing things that maybe you couldn't do in years past. So first and foremost, it came down to, okay, who do we want steering this ship? And it was, we need to go out and get a coach with a proven track record of winning. And who was out there? I mean, Jay Woodcroft was one of these guys, along with a number of other candidates. But, you know, Coach Q, if you want to talk wins, I mean, second only to Scotty Bowman. I mean, I think he's like 30 something wins away from 1,000 wins in the NHL as a head coach. And if you talk to any player across the NHL now who are still playing or retired guys, there is nothing bad, or there's nothing for the most part that they love. They love the X's and O's strategy of Coach Quenneville. And I think it's the in-game adjustments that are so critical, right? Some coaches have it, some coaches don't. And I think when you're standing on the bench and you see matchups or opportunities that arise, some coaches can push the right button, put the right combinations of players out there, the right matchups. And he's one of the best, if not the best. So I think that the Ducks fans are going to be able to sit there and watch and say that, hey, you know, wow, why is this group of players going out? And so it's going to be interesting for them to see, you know, kind of the intelligence of the coaching staff. You know, I know that guys across the league are thrilled that he's back in the game. I think Ducks fans are going to soon love him as the wins start to pile up. I think being able to complement a head coach like that with a number of really high quality coaches, Jay Woodcroft, who could be like, what, head coach part B? And I think that's going to be great because, you know, we all know the glaring weaknesses in this franchise on the ice is PK and power play. And when you think about if you were middle of the road, I mean, I think we ended up like 31st and 30th at the end of last season, respectively. So if you're like in 15 to 18 rank range, I mean, think about how many more points that is and how many points the Ducks actually just missed out of, you know, the wild card. So I think that the primary focus after Coach Q was to find somebody that could really shore up the PK and the PP. And I think Jay Woodcroft, certainly with the numbers you've already put out there. Now, do we have McDavid, Draisaitl, Hyman, those type of guys? Well, we might not have those three type of guys, but I think bringing in some high quality players, and I think for the power play, you got to have shooters. You have to have multiple threats to shoot. And I think as a goaltender, when you're trying to have a defensive scheme, you know, when you only have one shooter out there to worry about, it's really easy to defend against. You get the nuance of a guy who only wants to pass the puck. I mean, you think about Getze, it was like, please, Getze, shoot the puck on the power play. But I mean, as a possible future Hall of Famer, he was able to thread the needle more times than not. But I think that's what Jay Woodcroft's going to do. I think he's going to have multiple shooters who are threats to shoot the puck. And I think he's going to have guys who are going to be willing to get in front of that net and screen the goalie. I mean, I was at the development camp a couple weeks ago after the draft, and I went and watched the goalies work out. And I mean, the two goalies that were there, Buttigieg and Clara, I mean, 6'6 and 6'7. And I could not believe how big they were. And I don't know how anybody scores on these guys. But the way you score on guys like that is they rely on technique and they go down to take away a certain position. And when they do that, If they can't see the puck, they're just hoping that it hits them or goes wide. And I think that that net front presence is going to be a key moving forward.
Oh, before Guy goes on a size of pad rant here, we're gonna move on. No, a lot of good points, Guy. And to name a few, I like the Leafs power play. I like the Edmonton Oilers power play. I like power plays that really utilize the flanks, right? Those two flanks come in, you know, skates in the neutral zone, and they're getting that puck with some serious gap. They can throw it weak side with space, right? Or they can just snizzy it shelf, right? So I love that option. We want movement, right? A lot of times over the last few seasons, that lack of maybe movement and quick passing and maybe the odd switch every so often, right? So I'm looking for a lot more creativity. And when you got a percentage like that from Jay Woodcroft and his past historical numbers, I mean, they speak for himself. And I think you need that creativity. You need that movement. You need to think outside the box to really get these other teams' PKs scrambling.
And not to interrupt you, but that's the thing is, like, without movement or rotation, you become stagnant and it makes it really easy to defend. I mean, if you slide into the umbrella and the guys go into a diamond and you don't rotate any players, they can just stay stationary. They can get in shooting lanes and then the puck is passed very prettily. Is that a word? Prettily?
Prettily. It is a word. Here at Duckstream. Prettily is a word here at Duckstream.
Fancily?
Fancily? Anything. Anything you want, Guy.
But
this is your room.
And then you watch it and we've seen it. And I've stood in the Honda Center, listened to the fans get a little, you know, like shoot the puck because it's a lot of nice passing to the perimeter and then nothing ever gets into a danger area. So I think that rotation and movement making the other teams really have to decide if they're chasing the puck and the puck carrier or they're going to stay back and play more of a zone defensive system. So that's where you get guys out of position. And then that's where you get those seam passes.
The perimeterally.
Prettily.
Hey, all those words are confirmed gold here at Duckstream.
Yeah.
Pat Verbeek's been busy, right?
Is he making up words too?
Honestly, move after move. And yeah, I'm sure you see this in the comments, social media. Oh, it's like some fans, they just... the greed, right? And that's just hockey fans. It's one of those things where you enter off season and it's like, come on, like Granlund. We'll get to that in a sec. But just big time moves, trades to bolster your roster, starting with this one. You get Kreides from the Blue Shirts, and the harsh reality of this one is losing a top prospect like Carey Trance, right? He just came off a World Junior win. I loved his game in World Juniors. I loved his game in these rookie faceoff tournaments. He's just a 200-foot player, north-south, stick on puck, crash and bang. So I just think he's going to be a longtime national leaguer. But you bolster your offense. You get more goal-scoring depth. You need goals. You know that. You go out and get it. By any means necessary. Thoughts on that trade? And of course, there's picks being exchanged each way. Just touch on that trade.
I love it. It was on my wish list. And I can't say who or where or when, but I had a conversation with some people with the Ducks. I'll just leave it at that. And this is a couple of months ago, right after the season had ended. And
So you're saying you're in the end.
Listen, I think that like places are bugged. And people listen to your conversations because I said, listen, there are a couple of things I'm going to tell you that I think that the team needs to do.
I knew you were on the inside. I didn't know this much, though.
Well, okay. I didn't know that they even
listened. Just share what you can, Guy. Yeah. Share what you can.
I couldn't believe they actually listened to me. But no, I my first thought was, listen, Rangers don't want Kreider. He's looking for a new home. All he needs to talk to is, you know, Trouba and Strom and Vetrano. And say, you know, how is it really in Anaheim? They want to move me. I'm looking for a place to go. And I want to have an impact on a team that's on the rise. And I'm sure those guys sold Kreider on like, hey, we're right there. Like, we need a couple pieces to the puzzle. And one of them is a scorer on the power play. But I mean, if you follow the Rangers and follow Chris Kreider's career, he's also just an incredible threat on the penalty killing unit, right? I mean, he's out there. He's got that great speed, even in the early 30s. Great speed. He's able to attack at all times. And he's, you know, he's a big guy. He's powerful. He drives the net. So I think that, you know, he's a dual threat. So I was extremely, as a fan and an alumni and a broadcaster, I mean, I couldn't be more happy with that win. And I know, like, you know, you're giving up a prized possession, but it boils down to the where are we right now as an organization? And you know, is Carey Trant going to help us this season or next season or the season after? Or is he going to help us 5 years down the line? And how many guys do we already have that are maybe similar to his skill set that are already within the organization? So, I mean, those trades are always hard to make because you're giving up some of the future. But, you know, with the kind of a win now mentality, you have to shore up a weakness in the organization. And I think Chris Kreider does that.
And his game translates to playoffs. And whether that's getting it done offensively in the playoffs on the PK, the speed translates to playoffs. I just think his net front game, right, in particular on the power play, I just think he brings those net front goal. Like,
yeah, without a doubt.
If you're a 50 goal scorer, recent within the last couple of years, you're scoring from everywhere, right? And he gets to those gritty areas. So his speed translates to playoffs. His net front presence translates to playoffs. Another move I think translates to playoffs is the Trevor Zegras and Ryan Poehling trade, right?
Yep.
Just touch on that one.
Yeah, listen, I'm a big fan of Z, and I mean, he's got a lot of fans, right? And, you know, talk about skill sets fitting into a certain mold and a team that you're trying to build. And, you know, his flair and his excitement and his creativity are off the charts, right? I mean, we've seen some just highlight goals, and like, he brings people to the rink, he puts people in the stands, and he excites people because they don't know what he's going to do next. Now, that is awesome. And, you know, but sometimes on a team that's rebuilding and trying to get to the next level, they say, listen, we want you to tone down your creativity because we need you to be a 200-foot player. And especially if you're going to be a centerman, I mean, there's a whole bunch of responsibility that a lot of people don't realize at the center position at NHL. You know, you're first back, then you got to get back up into the action on the offense, and you can't always just think about scoring goals, because there's too much responsibility in your own zone. So I think Trevor went through a huge growth. You know, obviously the injuries always impact whenever you miss games throughout the course of a season. And if it's more than, you know, a few games, you know, that affects your development. And then all of a sudden that's pushed into the next season. So, you know, first, you know, I wish him well in Philly. I think he's going to be a great NHL everyday player. He's something that they need in Philly. And I think for the Ducks getting Poehling, they're getting a 6'2" guy, 200 and something pounds, center, but can play the wing. So he's pretty versatile. And, you know, I mean, Pat likes big body guys. And you start thinking about the Florida Panthers and the success that they've continually had in the last 3 years, going to the Stanley Cup Finals 3 years in a row, winning the last two. Physical team, right? I mean, they wear other teams down. And it was funny, we were in a golf tournament somewhere, and somebody said, I can't believe the Florida Panthers keep winning. Why are they winning? And I go, man, they just bully the other teams to death. Like, they are physical. They, even to the point where Edmonton in one of those games in the finals said, we're going to out physical you all night long. And I think they lost like 6-1. And they might have started to win the battle physically, but Florida was way too smart. And then took advantage of all the power plays that they had. So I love the Poehling move. I think he's a real versatile player, and not just for the 82 games. I mean, I think he was coming off some career highs last season with Philly. So I'm sure he's probably surprised to be involved in the trade. But, you know, when you're wanted by another team, that always makes the trade feel a little bit better.
If you love today's content, then I'd love for you to take a trip over to VGHC.com or stop by their Costa Mesa flagship store to see what the club is cooking up for hockey fans worldwide. You save some cap space, right?
And the money, yes.
Money you save when you can. I just think that bolsters the bottom six for the team, right? It just, you fill in those pieces, as you mentioned, coming off career highs. I think he's got a bomb of a shot. One thing I remember just playing Philly.
Everybody's like, it's the sticks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the sticks. Yeah.
Okay, he says it's the sticks. You're hearing it here.
It's a conspiracy theory against goaltenders. But anyways, but he does have a good shot. It's a heavy shot.
And he made us pay. Right.
He
had a great game there in Philly, and he was razzling and dazzling out there. Another move that you save on is the Peter Mrazek, John Gibson trade. Right. You also get two picks. So now you're bolstering that draft capital. Gibby, buddy of mine, tough to see him go for sure. I just think it's a new start and a new beginning for him. Done a ton of great things for the Anaheim Ducks organization. We wish him well. Just speak on you watching him over the years. In regards to John Gibson's game, what do you enjoy? What did you enjoy while watching Gibby over the years?
Yeah, I mean, we could probably have a complete show just on Gibby and what he's meant to this organization. And you know, I mean, you know, listen, it seemed like every show that we were doing, it was like, okay, now Gibby's just passed Guy Hebert in this category. Now Gibby just passed J.S. Jaguar in this category. Now Gibby stands alone in games played and creeping up on all-time wins. And I think fell just a couple short. He passed me by middle last season, but fell short of Jiggy's by, I think, just a couple. But yeah, I mean, John has had an incredible career and impact on, you know, I mean, not just the Anaheim Ducks, but Orange County. I mean, him and his wife and kids have been longstanding, you know, patrons of this great community. And, you know, he will be missed. You know, we all know because we've played this game, you know, at some point in your career, it's actually better for you to move on and have a fresh start. I mean, I think Gibby will relish the role in Detroit. I think he will show that he is still more than capable of being a number one netminder. And they desperately need that type of goaltender there. That's obviously why the trade was made. But, you know, as a fan of goaltenders and just watching him night in and night out, I mean, listen, when he competed, I mean, his athleticism allowed him to make saves that no other goalie in this league right now can make. Everybody is very technical. I mean, everybody is taught, you know, kind of a very similar system. There's a couple kind of throwbacks, maybe Jonathan Quick. You know, there's a few guys that still play like a unpredictable style where they will stack the pads or they'll dive poke check or they'll do something that's kind of out of the ordinary and that keeps shooters on their toes. But yeah, I mean, I think last season he had that one save.
The Vancouver one with behind the back?
Behind the back. I mean, first of all, the first pad save was out of this world.
Yeah.
But then to be able to spin around and get his hand behind his back and make that save. So, I mean, I think that's the type of save, as we all know, and we just watched again in the Stanley Cup playoffs is, you know, goalies have to make the saves they're supposed to. And then to win games and win championships, you've got to make the saves that no one expects you're able to make. And that's what Gibby has treated to all of us as fans over his tenure here as a Ducks goaltender. So I will miss seeing that. And, you know, but the flip side is that he moves on and we get a nice veteran goaltender in Peter Mrazek. I think the great compliment for this trade is the fact that Dostal, check, Mrazek, check. They were teammates in world championships and world cup and world somethings. And so they are very familiar with one another. And I think bringing in a veteran guy, Mrazek's 33, he's played 432 games in the NHL. So he's got a plethora of experience. And I think that always bodes well with the young goaltender. You have a nice little relationship. You keep pushing each other for playing time. But I think that's going to be really nice that, you know, Dosti will have not just Peter Budaj to talk to. You know, I know his relationship with Gibby was great because they competed for the net because there's only one net. Two goalies, just the math doesn't work, right? So I think Peter's going to bring that kind of veteran leadership to the team, not just for Dosti, but for everyone else as well.
If all of you are wondering about just the confidence level of this Peter Mrazek, we were in World Juniors in Edmonton and Calgary my second year, and it was Jack Campbell and Peter Mrazek head-to-head. Gibby in that game was backing up, but Gibby very much could have been number one. Now they're giving Jack Campbell, I think, starts in the deeper games. And then, of course, Gibby goes on to just have a dominant World Junior career, of course. But Peter Mrazek, I mean, he steals the show in this game. It was a goaltending duel. And after his saves, he would selly to the crowd as if he was back playing home in Czech. Like, it was unbelievable. So the confidence level, he kind of thrives in high energy situations, and he's a guy that can make phenomenal saves as well. I mean, he's got some highlight reel tape of his own. So I look really forward to seeing what we're getting with Mrazek. I've had some history just playing against him, and boy, is he a competitor. So I definitely look forward to it. In other goaltender news, Billy Huso, who I thought stole the show there in Utah, even though he didn't. The good guys didn't come out with the 2 points. Boy, I mean, it just an onslaught in the shots against department. He held the good guys in it. I just talk about his contract, $4.4 million over the 2 years, 0.925 save percentage last season. I mean, by eye test, I don't know too much. I'm not gonna try to. You know, fool Gee, you know, when it comes to
sure,
the goaltending. So I'm going to keep my remarks limited. Have you have the floor, but Philly Huso, just talk about the deal, his game, in the kind of cup of coffee so far in the Ducks uniform.
So, well, the first thing that jumps out to me is the fact that, listen, the Ducks need veteran goaltending depth. And so to me, this is a incredible insurance policy. You know, last year and years past, either if Dostal or Gibson went down with an injury, you actually didn't know who you were calling up, right? Because there wasn't a lot with veteran experience down in San Diego. So I think it's an incredibly good insurance policy. Yeah, he came and played great. Now, listen, he was a guy who was coming off a really big contract that things didn't work out. He had played great in St. Louis. And signed a big ticket in Detroit. And then all of a sudden, you know, I think because of the team in front of him, you know, their expectations of what he was going to be able to do in Detroit didn't match the value of what they were paying him. So I think that it was, okay, we need to look for another goaltender. Personally, I think it's you had to give him more support, much like Mrazek and other goalies who have played in Detroit. But moving to Anaheim, he showed clearly and instantly why he's still an NHL caliber goaltender. So I think that him coming here gives the Ducks organization that depth that they really need. I think it gives them confidence to know that if there's that injury, he comes up immediately and replaces whoever's been injured. And I think just once again, he's another big goaltender who just does a lot of blocking. And so to work with Peter Budaj and Sudsy, and I think the really thing is, like, you know, we have that developing team in San Diego with so much great young talent. And I know there was a lot of injuries last year. Sukanik was out for the whole season with a knee. They had some other young goalies kind of rotating through. But when he went down to San Diego and played, they played like a completely different team down there. They had the confidence that they had a veteran goalie who was going to make these saves. And I mean, I think the first game he played in San Diego, he stood on his head and made, you know, I don't know, like 40 something saves and won a big game for them in their kind of pursuit of a chase for the playoffs. So I think all in all, it's organizational depth, and it gives a big insurance policy to the team.
What about maybe the latest and biggest, or yeah, Mikael Granlin? That's a huge signing. Now, I touched on it before all this trade and free agent talk. Just, you hear some fans and they're like, Mario, why didn't you guys get Marner or what? It's just like, whoa, you pump the brakes. You know what I mean? Like,
well, he was a sexy guy, right? He was out there as, you know, the highest profile free agent, possible organizational changing player. To the casual fan, I mean, he was like, everybody wants this guy. But the story is much bigger than that.
Some people come across as if, you know, any team could go out and get Ehlers and Marner and have like a 3-4-5. It's just like, relax, you know. But going back to the signing, big deal. Look, only 3 years though. And I think that from a safety standpoint, right? It's just he's got 3 years to absolutely dominate. I think, look, he's played a lot of games in the National Hockey League. He wants to come to Anaheim, mentioning hopping on a phone with Timu and that great phone call. So seems excited to be here. I mean, just talk about that signing. I mean, big time signing from Pat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, you're trying to fit pieces that are out there into your puzzle. And so could you get the biggest fish out there and then say, okay, how do we fit Mitch Marner into what we're trying to do here? I mean, I'm not going to equate Mitch Marner to Trevor Zegras exactly, but if you think about, you know, maybe Trevor Zegras in 5 or 6 years down the line from, and if he goes the way he was projected to go, maybe he comes kind of a Mitch Marner type of player. But if you bring Marner in here, does he fit kind of Pat's blueprint of success? I mean, not big, not physical. Obviously, he can put 100 points up in a season, but he wouldn't be playing with Austin Matthews. He wouldn't be playing, you know, so it doesn't translate in my mind to, you know, what he did in Toronto would be exactly what he would do here. Would he have been a nice fit? I'm sure they could have made a place for Mitch Marner here. But I think with Granlund, what he brings you is like 900 and something career NHL games. Great veteran. Another guy who can play center. He can slide to the left wing if he needs to. Gives you some more versatility. He's not a big guy, but he's a bulldog out there, right? He's like five. He's like my size. He's like a bulldog. So he goes after those loose pucks. And, you know, you think about when you scout guys and you're looking at, you know, who's going to be available. You know, our scouting department, you know, the unsung heroes of the organization, whether it's, you know, guys looking at, you know, kids that are going to be drafted. So if it's that department, the amateur scouting, or if it's our pro scouting department, Tony Herkes, I was talking to, and we were both talking to during the draft. And, you know, I said, Tony, so what do you know about these kids? He goes, I don't know. I do all the pro scouting. I said, oh, so we need to talk to you about free agency. And he's like, oh, don't put me on TV or the radio. I don't want to be on there. But those guys, they go and they watch game after game after game. So, you know, going into this free agency, they knew who they wanted to target. And maybe some guys weren't available. Like maybe some guys re-signed with their former teams before they became free agents. But I think Granlund is a guy who, you know, I watched him score a hat trick for Dallas in the playoffs. And, you know, being like guys who score big goals, I mean, they just don't grow on trees every day. And I think that he's going to be able to be a real impact player here. So, I mean, I personally love it. It's not the sexiest, you know, it's not like Granlund. Like, was that a guy even out there? Yeah. But the people who do know and should know certainly knew. And so I'm a big fan of this move. And, you know, again, you're trying to put that right piece into the puzzle here.
And $7 million is not $9 million.
No, you didn't overpay. You didn't give him 5 or 6 years.
Exactly. So whether it was signing Z to a fair deal at the time, there's been a lot of great contracts just number wise from Pat. So, hopefully that continues. For all the naysayers or the jaded, can we call it jaded fans, who just want to take, you know, 4 or 5 superstars home, how about just look at next year's free agency and just understand that you got to leave some serious cap room available for the ball players for next summer, right?
Well, I think a lot of teams have done that, right? I mean, not just Anaheim, but I think a lot of teams with the cap going up by like $13 million or whatever it was. I mean, like all of a sudden you got a lot of space that you didn't have before. And if you were kind of toward the bottom of a salary cap, like the Ducks have been, so all of a sudden you had a lot of room, and now you even have more room. And then by next summer, with the players, and, you know, I mean, who knows what McDavid will do, but, you know, he's a guy who desperately wants to win the Stanley Cup, right? I mean, he doesn't care about money anymore. He's made enough. He just wants to be able to win. I mean, I think he wants to win in Edmonton. But if it gets to the point, like you talk to a guy like Brad Marchand, like who would have thought he would have stayed with the Florida Panthers, even winning the Cup? But he won the Cup, and he's like, I don't want to go win anywhere else. So I want to stay here and have an opportunity to continue to win. So, you know, when you get a little bit later in your career, really, that is the only thought you have in your mind, is that if I haven't touched that cup, that's the only thing I want to do. And if I have to leave at some point, then I will. But the Ducks will have a considerable amount of money on the table. And I like the fact that Granlund being 33, you know, 33, I mean, he's still going to be productive for the next 3 years. After 36, you know, it takes a special player to continue to be able to be, you know, very productive in the NHL, but just because it's incredibly hard league.
And he's a guy, another facilitator, right? Great vision, great playmaker. So you think of the playmaker, the Leo Carlson. Now you got Granlund, right? Stromer. So you think about the guys that like to dish the puck, and then you think Cutter. What is he going to explode in the goal department next year? Big time shooter. You already got Frankie V. Troy, we know historically what he can do, right? So you got these guys. You add Kreidzin. So you got some pure shooters mixed with some pure playmakers. And I love what Pat's doing with the offense. I know you've been just scratching and clawing, Guy, wanting to touch back on the goaltender subject. I know you've been breathing heavy. I think Ducks fans would like to know, just while we have you here, this isn't going to be your last time on Eat 'Em Up. I can promise you that.
I hope not. I mean, I hope, well, first, I hope we get good ratings off of this episode.
I think we will.
So, you know, if not, I'll just keep watching it on repeat to try to get the numbers up.
We'll have viewing parties. Yeah, yeah. We'll get the views up. No, I think we're going to have lights out numbers here, but I think listeners would love to just hear your perspective on goaltenders who've donned the Anaheim Ducks uniform other than yourself that maybe you appreciated watching. Give me one guy, just fan of playing style, and another guy who, a little bit of a dark horse, maybe underrated, underappreciated. Just give me one and one. I'd love to hear. I know listeners would love to hear.
Yeah. Wow. There's been a lot of goalies here. So let me go through kind of my memory bank. Well, I mean, I'll go all the way back to when I first started playing here, and some guys didn't play a lot of games and then were traded and moved on. You know, nobody was better than Ronnie Tugnutt, my first partner here in Anaheim. I mean, he certainly was, you know, he looked like he was a CPA, right? He walked in, he had the little specs on, little skinny guy or whatever. But when he got it in his goalie gear, he turned into like a Superman and would just absolutely, I mean, talk about athletic goaltenders and stacking the pads. I mean, you know, he still, I think, holds the record for, you know, whatever, the 1,000 saves against the Boston Bruins in that game when he played for the Quebec Nordiques. But he was, I mean, he was a special goaltender, had an incredible career. I mean, I probably played for six or so teams, but, you know, Tugger was kind of just a gem, and he was a great guy. He was a great goaltender partner. But you know what? He was followed up quickly by a guy named Mikhail Stolenkov. And unless you were an early Ducks fan, Mighty Ducks fan, people probably don't remember Stolenkov, but
I just see these guys on some of the retro hockey cards. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, just if you're a hockey enthusiast, as we are, as I know a lot of our listeners are, those are two names. It's just like, oh my gosh, I feel like if I got out my shoebox full of hockey cards, those two names would come.
They're
up,
in there somewhere.
I mean? Yeah.
But you know, like people don't know. Like, I mean, Mikhail was so good, and I was so fortunate to have him as a backup. I mean, I think he probably played like 120, 130 games for us. But he was like the perfect complement, because back then we would play, you know, 12, 14, 16 games in a row as a starter. And then we'd get like one game off, and then we'd run another 10 or so and then get a game off. And Mikhail was the perfect, like if his pulse got over 50, it maybe got to 55. Like he was absolutely a flatliner. And for a goaltender, that's an incredible, you know, innate ability to have, right? I mean, he never got wound up ever. And so he was that guy. Just, you could throw him in. Ron Wilson would be like, hey, Mikhail, we're going to play you tonight. He'd be like, okay. And that was it. And he went out and stood on his head. I mean, he played for the Russian Olympic team. And I mean, so he had world championships, world cup, I mean, everything. So he was one of these guys who kind of was under the radar playing out here for a lot of years. And I know this is more than two guys, but you think about some of the other guys who had really great careers here. And I think one guy who's really an unsung hero, because the Ducks have been very fortunate. Whoever has scouted the Ducks goaltending for 31 or now 32 years, they've hit grand slams. And, you know, I mean, I played 8 years, then Jiggy played like 9 years. Freddie Anderson came in shortly before Gibby, but there was a guy named Jonas Hiller. And a lot of people don't remember Jonas Hiller. And he was an incredible goaltender. And if you look in the stats, and I only know because I'm a goalie nerd stat type of guy, but, you know, I mean, Jonas was like, you know, finished like maybe 10 wins below me. And so that's, you know, whatever, 20 something below Jiggy. And he was here for like 8 seasons. So if there's one goaltender, I think that is kind of overlooked with what he did and his impact on the organization, I'd have to pick Jonas Hiller.
Ditto. Same. I had the pleasure of playing with him, and just a unbelievable all around human being too. Just the nicest. And if you think about some of those seasons post Ducks Cup win there, I mean, those were some big time playoff performances, yeah, against Detroit, right? Some big time, not only regular season performances, but playoffs as well. As we wrap things up, you've been traveling, Guy, haven't you? You went to New York?
Yeah.
World traveler?
Yeah, taking advantage of the off time. Yeah, yeah. Our daughter lives in New York City and works there. And so I've got family still on the East Coast in upstate. So, yep, always try to get back there, you know, twice the season or twice the off season. And then, you know, try to get to some other of the beautiful parts of the Adirondack region. Lake George, if we can. And then we try to get out to the Cape or Nantucket. So, yeah, we were back there for a little bit. Going to head back again before the summer's over. And, you know, hey, stay tuned to my Instagram.
Cool.
Right? So people can follow me on Instagram. I don't even know what my Instagram handle is, but
just
follow me. And, you know, listen, eat them up. We're trying to go viral, right?
I know.
On our Instagram handles.
Okay. Well, so I'll be tagging the heck out of you. So I'll be doing my part. That's for sure. Golf game. Where is it at? You know, I know you're big when it comes to the Ducks alumni. You get out with a lot of these participants who win big Guy Hebert, get a chance to golf with Guy Hebert type situations. How's your golf game?
Listen, I tell everybody I'm a great partner. If you want to invite me to your member guest.
Cool.
I'm honest with my handicap. I don't practice at all. And I think my handicap's like 11 or 12 index. So, I shoot in the 80s and then have some scratchy 90s. But I can get it done if there's any invites out there in the cyber world.
So you're a good mix of good camaraderie and good play.
Oh, I'm a better entertainer.
Cool.
On the golf course for cool. Sure.
Okay.
Well, I can chip and putt. I just don't drive the ball far anymore.
I will not be golfing with you. You know, me and golf, it's like oil and water. It really is.
Hey, you either love it or you hate it. I mean, it's just, not hate it. You either love it and play it or you just don't play it.
I play golf 2 times a year, and that's at the Anaheim Ducks Golf Classic to start the year, and the NHL or the Ducks Alumni Classic, of course, in the spring. 2 times a year. Fritchie, you talked to our boy, Mr. Kent French.
Yeah, the world traveler.
Yeah, the world traveler. He's the true world traveler. You're traveler B, as you mentioned earlier. He's traveler A, of course. Have you talked to Frenchie?
Listen, I can't carry his suitcases anymore because of what they were just on. So, yeah. So, I stayed in contact with him and his family as they traveled the globe with their daughter. And, I followed their YouTube channel, their Instagrams, all their social media feeds to feel like I was actually on the trips with them. It looked incredible. We would text throughout the course of the season saying like, hey, you're showing stuff from Thailand. Are you still there? No, we're in Australia, or we're in New Zealand, or we're wherever. I think it's been an incredible journey, an adventure for the family. They just got back. I don't want to give away too much stuff, but we're supposed to have lunch tomorrow. So hopefully I'll get some more firsthand information from them.
I'm going to DM him after this this convo. I mean, I have to.
You got to get him on. I mean, like, just to talk about what you know, him and his wife and daughter experienced. Again, I don't think, you know, have enough time in an episode, but just even to get like a glimpse into that travel is, you know, would be incredible. And I mean, stuff is still popping up on his social media accounts. So if any of the listeners want to check it out, I mean, it's Frenchitivity family and some really neat stuff.
I've been following along. I love the Frenchitivity stuff. Honestly, the quality's there. It calms me, right? It just it's got this great vibe to all the vids I've seen. So I've been keeping just in tune to what all the good stuff the Frenchie's been got going on. Just traveling, getting those reward points up, and now he's back. So I'm gonna slide into his DMs after this combo. Guy Hebert, ladies and gentlemen. What a fun time that was. You are a beauty, Guy. Thanks for joining us. And wow, fun times in the Career Studio. Eat them up. We'll catch you next time.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.